Welcome to another episode of More Happy Life, the podcast that will teach you how to trigger upward spirals of health and happiness in your life. I'm Andy Proctor, a happiness activist whose goal is to make your life more happy with science-backed strategies and powerful interviews. If you enjoy this episode, share it and let me know by tapping the stars in the reviews. Welcome back to another episode of More Happy Life. Thank you so much for being here. I'm excited to have you listening on this episode where we talk about the importance of sleep. And I have an amazing guest with me who has both personal experience and has been doing professional engagement and research on this topic that is so important for all of us. And her name is Julie Fligar. She is an internationally recognized patent perspective leader, an accomplished advocate, and the award-winning author of Wide Awake and Dreaming, a Memoir of Narcolepsy. Since receiving a diagnosis of narcolepsy with cataplexy in 2007, Fligar advanced her leadership in the sleep and healthcare space through speaking engagements, publications, earned media, collaboration and advocacy, and awareness initiatives. Currently, she serves as president and CEO of Project Sleep, a nonprofit organization raising awareness about sleep health and sleep disorders. Prior to accepting this role, Fligar served as president of Project Sleep's board of directors while also gaining invaluable experience in marketing and philanthropy at the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network and City of Hope. Additionally, she served on the National Institutes of Health Sleep Disorders Research Advisory Board from 2012 to 2015. She also received her BA from Brown University in 2005 and her JD from Boston College Law School in 2009, focusing on health, law, policy, and rare disease drug development. So this is an amazing interview. She's obviously an incredibly impressive person, and just wanted to put in my two cents here in saying that sleep is one of the most important things that we could learn about and talk about. So many people struggle with sleep, and too many people who struggle with sleep do so silently. So wanted to kind of bring awareness to some issues with this episode and also to help you to learn a few things about sleep and hopefully encourage you to get better sleep yourself and not get down on yourself about whether you are tired and sleepy, but just to be able to encourage you to rest more and really prioritize your sleep. So without any more further ado, we shall welcome Julie to the show. Okay, Julie, thank you so much for being on the show with me. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Andy.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I think when I was on Instagram, I was just looking around and I found your account and I just thought this is a topic that I think we really need to talk more about. I've talked about a lot of things from depression to anxiety to energy to all kinds of different topics on the More Happy Life podcast, even creativity and insights. And I think sleep is absolutely critical for all of those things. And you know, one of the topics that I'm most interested in talking about is energy. And energy isn't, I don't think energy is just defined by our physical state and feeling, you know, energized in terms of our physical energy, but also by our mental clarity and our emotional state and in so many other factors. And this is why, you know, when I found you on Instagram, I wanted to kind of dig deeper with you about how energy is so impacted by sleep in all those areas. So I'd love to just dive right in here with you and kind of hear a little bit about, you know, your story about why you started to kind of study all of these things and help us to kind of see where that started for you.
Yeah, definitely. So I really had no problems with my energy, you know, physical or mental for most of my life, I'd say until I was about 18 or 19. And I was in college, I started to have issues getting through classes. And I won't say that I fell asleep necessarily, but I just wasn't cognitively there, I guess.
Yeah.
And then after I graduated from college, I went to law school, and I had a really tough time with law school. And so it was strange because I felt there was this one day after Thanksgiving, you know, I went home for Thanksgiving, and then we were getting ready for exams. So I drove back to school, and I was like one of the only people in the library that day. And I remember thinking, I have so much more willpower and like so much more discipline than all my friends. Like they're out like probably like, you know, Friday shopping or whatever.
Right.
And I am in the library. And then I, next thing I kind of remember, I was, you know, 3 hours into being at the library, and I was waking up off of my textbook, and I'd basically been using my textbook as a pillow more than having gotten through, and I'd gotten through like a page of work.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking at that time, like, where did my willpower go? Like, who is this? Like, what's wrong with me? And really thinking that like something was wrong with my drive and my discipline.
Yeah.
And so it, you know, I just thought maybe I wasn't meant to be in law school, like that the work was too challenging, I guess. And so there are other strange things that were happening as well that same year. Times when I was laughing at jokes and my knees were giving out on me, which is very strange. And then other times when I thought burglars were breaking into my apartment, but then I would wake up again and the burglar wouldn't be there. So there were certainly different strange things that were happening. But
yeah,
at the end of that year, it wasn't until I couldn't drive 15 minutes to school in the morning without getting like super sleepy that I was like, oh my God, maybe I have a sleep problem. And so it was, looking back now, I lost touch with wakefulness and cognition over many, many years, but I lost it so slowly that I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
And so soon thereafter that summer, I did go to a doctor and mention some of these different issues. The first, I thought I had a sleep disorder. I had a brother-in-law who had sleep apnea, so that was the only one I was aware of. But then I mentioned about my knees buckling with emotion, like laughter. And that doctor didn't really do too much to help me, but eventually I figured out what I had. That summer, which was a condition called narcolepsy with cataplexy. So it is a neurological sleep disorder in which aspects of dream sleep in particular are actually mistimed. And so all those different things I was experiencing were symptoms of narcolepsy with cataplexy. And I remember thinking like, I don't have narcolepsy. That's a joke. Like that's just someone like falling asleep when they're standing or in the middle of a conversation. Right?
Yeah.
And that hadn't happened to me. It had really been so much more invisible. And so then, you know, with my diagnosis, I was able to then start treatment, which then helped me realize just how badly it had gotten before I'd gotten help. But I also became really fascinated at that point in, like, not only did the people think narcolepsy is a joke, but we didn't really take sleep all that seriously in general. And that even my own like upbringing and the high school and college I had gone to, you know, bragging about pulling an all-nighter or getting 4 hours of sleep in high school because I was trying to like be in all the clubs and do all the things, you know. And that was a way of life in a badge of honor kind of way. And then once I personally, you know, because of my own circumstances, had realized like, wow, sleep can really be messed up. You know, like in my case, it was like my sleep had been so disrupted, but kind of for everyone in a way, there's this invisible stuff that's happening. And I don't know how aware we are of, you know, like you said, like energy is, there's so many layers to that. That there are a lot of people that could probably maximize their sleep better, but also there's also people that have undiagnosed sleep disorders that, you know, most of people with sleep disorders like narcolepsy or sleep apnea don't even have diagnoses. So, and I know what it's like to have lived years and watch myself go downhill, but not even realizing it. So that's kind of what drove me to start Project Sleep and to be advocating and raising awareness and trying to find cool new ways to get people to recognize some of those subtleties and think maybe that could be a sleep disorder.
Yeah, that is so important. I think I really love, I believe it was Brené Brown who talks about how we have to really get rid of the idea of exhaustion as a status symbol, because I think we often do have that, right? It's like, oh yeah, I got like 3 hours of sleep last night and just working like crazy and even like this like entrepreneurial grind and all this stuff. And really like, yep, that's about the worst thing you could ever do.
Yep. Yep. And I love like motivational everything. So I'm always like watching motivational videos and that kind of stuff. And then I'll get to certain ones where they'll be like, you want to make your life better? You just have to get up an hour earlier every day to fit it in. And I'll be like, no, that's not the answer. You have to be able to prioritize, you know, you just can't get up at 4 a.m. every day.
And right,
you're able to then do more. And so, you know, one of my best friends who knew me from many years before my diagnosis and then afterwards said it was just almost like a, you know, something out of like a Greek tale, that basically for me, my ability to work longer and harder than other people was my strength, you know. And I was that person that really dug in and just, I wasn't usually smarter or faster than other people. I just knew I would work harder and longer. And now I had this condition that meant I really had to sleep like 8 to 10 hours a night. And I just didn't have that time to do that anymore. So learning how to then adapt and prioritize my own time and find new ways to succeed, you know, was a really big challenge for me personally.
Yeah. Now that has to be so difficult too, because you see that as almost like where your value comes from, is that you're such a hard worker. And and then all of a sudden it's like, actually, you have to sleep. And if not, you know, there's huge consequences. And so, man, that has to be so hard.
And I think for a lot of people, like what you said about Brené Brown and, you know, that we had one of my advocates for Project Sleep wrote an essay that she said, you know, as a culture, we define our worth by our wakefulness. And if you don't have your wakefulness, then what is your worth? And, you know, we have postcards for Project Sleep that say like, sleepiness is not laziness too, because, you know, part of my own journey and a lot of people's is that either we're feeling sleepy or we're actually falling asleep. And people then think that you're lazy. And I thought, like I said, like I thought I lost my willpower. And I don't know why I thought, like, sleep isn't really all that fun. It's like not something you remember. So if I felt like being lazy, like I'd rather like play video games or like scroll Instagram. Like I don't remember my sleep. So like if we start to see people that are falling asleep in situations, you know, maybe that's not a character flaw and it's something we should be really looking out for.
No, I think that definitely helps, because I mean, I've definitely experienced that in terms of, you know, seeing whether that's, you know, fellow students, classmates, or even coworkers. And I remember in one situation where I worked, it was an office, and I had, there was a coworker who was just always falling asleep. And I don't think it was just that he was lazy or tired. I didn't know, cause I didn't ask him, because I didn't, you know, I felt like it was maybe too personal, but I think he might've had, you know, a sleep disorder or something, because he was just always falling asleep and even to the point of snoring, in his cubicle. So, yeah. So I want to learn a little bit more about this, you know, because it's so interesting, all these things you do with Project Sleep. And, you know, I think I know so many people who they probably get maybe 5 to 6 hours of sleep per night, some of them even 4. And, you know, if people are getting that much sleep, or that little sleep, I should say, per night, and they don't really think it's a big deal, why is it such a big deal? Tell me a little bit more about Why is sleep so important?
Well, I think it's always important to remember too that it's everything's individual. So technically, I guess there are people that can sleep 5 or 6 hours a night and they can be okay. You really just have to, I think, be really true to yourself and think, how is your cognition during the day? Mm. And if you are sleeping 6 hours and you have, you know, full mental ability during the day, then that's great. I think that's probably not the case for a lot of people, that they are compensating in other ways. And that's what worries me, because I don't know if we're always so aware of that. But sleep is just an incredibly vital process. And what's fascinating is the science is really new compared to a lot of other areas or systems or things in the body. So, you know, they're still really learning a lot, but it seems really essential for all of our processes and, you know, recharging you in so many different ways. And so when we think of like sleep is like a blank space, it's just like a waste of time. It's like really not true at all. It's like your body goes into all these other processes. So I think they didn't even discover REM dream sleep until like the late 60s, I believe. And when you're in REM dream sleep in particular, your brain is as active or more active than if you're awake. So just think about that. Like, it's not even just all this really relaxing situation. Like parts of it are, like, your body goes from stage 1 to 2 to 3, where your body is slowing down and your breathing slowing down, your heart rate slowing down. And then all at once your brain goes into REM sleep and it's super active. And so that's something else, you know, and they don't even know all of what these different parts mean yet, but, it's a very particular process. You know, there is some great quote that basically, if like sleep wasn't necessary, then it's like the greatest error of like evolution, you know, because there is a lot to it. And a lot that can, you know, go wrong with it. But I think, again, it's just really concentrating on how you feel during the day. And imagine that a lot of people, if you're zoning out, if you're feeling moody, even like moodiness, is a lot of a big sign of how sleepiness can come out. So we think of people being hangry with hunger, but sleepiness is another reason that can cause people to be moody or have low abilities to manage like their emotions, stuff like that, which is really super important.
That is so important. Yeah. So I wonder if you could maybe share a few things that you've learned about, you know, what can, you know, so for me, I mean, I'm just going to get personal here. I recently have just felt so tired. I mean, I think it's probably because a lot of different things, change in job, change in the fact that we are owning a house and have renters in our basement. All these different things are different in different space of sleeping and stuff like that. But I've just been so tired. And so, you know, what are some things, and I feel like I get a pretty good amount of sleep, but I sometimes feel like I need more sleep too. And so what are some things that, you know, I can do, or people who are listening can do to improve like sleep patterns?
Well, I think, you know, that's, again, it's a really individualized process and depends on like what your different people's situations are. I think it's really important to sometimes recognize that I had never realized this, that alcohol can really affect sleep, and also medications. And I don't think people always know that. Like, there's like antidepressants are often REM suppressants. So there's just a lot going on. So often when people start to tell me if they're having all at once really terrible nightmares, for example, where you know, they think people are breaking into their apartment, or they feel like someone's like about to choke them, or like those are hypnagogic hallucinations. And then the sensation of like waking up, but you can't move your body, that's sleep paralysis. So those are both symptoms of narcolepsy, but those can happen to people that do not have narcolepsy, but those are usually during periods of like high stress, or something about, you know, alcohol or medications. So I think it's just kind of good to know, because some of those changes, like, doctors aren't always telling you like, hey, this might also really affect your sleep. But those kind of things can have a huge, huge impact. And, you know, one of the interesting things that to think about for, you know, you, but also for other people, is to think that, like, there's a great essay I read about sleep as being a negotiated process. It's like a social process. And we don't think of that, but everything that you agree to, you know, with loved ones or, you know, at work, it's all a negotiation socially. And what's going to be a consequence of that is your sleep. So, you know, the amount of time that you have to relax and to wind down and then to actually sleep. And I think when I heard that, it really helped because it made me realize, like, the decisions I'm making about my daytime are affecting, you know, my ability to then sleep at night. So, you know, and then I just really want to emphasize that if people feel like they are, like, it's not just a change, but they are feeling sleepy, like, every day, or feeling like they need to take a nap or they're having trouble driving, like, there's no shame in, like, going to a sleep doctor because there are real sleep disorders and you just won't know. Like, you won't know that you have sleep apnea or narcolepsy until you can get some testing done and see what's actually happening with your brain and your body. And that can just be life-changing to actually figure out. So, and you know, I think a lot of people also struggle with insomnia, and sleep doctors can be really, really helpful beyond medications. Like, there is cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia in particular, and that's shown to be the most effective treatment for insomnia long term, and there are different ways of doing that now online, so you don't have to always be able to see a clinician, although that's probably the best way, but you can do some of these same programs through your phone and stuff like that now. So just getting educated about what the different issues are, I think, is really important. And yeah, it's always going to be an individual process. Some people need to sleep 12 hours. Some people need to sleep six. Sleep is not even just a matter of time. It's about the quality and the timing of it. So I know for circadian rhythms is a whole new area, which is really fascinating. And some people's bodies aren't, like, ready to go to sleep till, like, 2 a.m. But then, you know, they want to sleep till 10 a.m. And so they're just off. And so talking to a sleep doctor about that to look if, you know, different things like melatonin or how to change that. I, you know, not a doctor myself, so I can't make recommendations, but to take it seriously, basically, and to look into what you can do.
That's really fascinating. And I think I liked what you said that, you know, there's no shame in going and understanding, you know, if you have some sort of a disorder or some sort of condition, knowing and discovering that is life changing, right? And and so I'm curious, how has, when once you kind of discovered that for yourself, how did that change your life?
Well, it was a beginning of a journey, which I'm still on, 11 years into being diagnosed. But, you know, I think finding other people that have narcolepsy or have sleep disorders has been really life-changing. It's where I've gotten the most, I think, is just through meeting other people, and you get little tips here and there from people. One of the most powerful things I found, though, is the spoon theory. Have you ever heard of the spoon theory?
I don't know if I have, so I would love to hear about this.
Yeah, so this is, like, a really popular concept in the chronic illness community. And chronic illnesses supposedly affect, like, half of Americans. So it does, you know, it's a big thing. And if you Google, like, the spoon theory or spoony, you'll see just a ton of, it's just a concept that's really resonated with a ton of people. So what it is I believe it was a woman who has lupus. She was at a diner with her friend, and her friend said, "I just don't really get it. Like, what's it really like to have lupus?" So they gathered, like, a bunch of spoons from different tables. So she had, like, 8 spoons. Yeah. And she said, "Okay, this is what it's like to have lupus." She's like, "You wake up in the morning. What do you want to do? You want to take a shower? Okay, that takes a spoon." She said, "What do you want? You're going to do next? You're going to drive to work? Okay, that takes a spoon. What are you going to do at work? Ooh, spreadsheets. That's going to take 2 spoons. And basically the concept is that you get to the end of the day, you come home, and you have 1 spoon left, and you haven't made dinner yet, but if you make dinner, you then will have dishes to do, and you still have laundry sitting on your bed. So it's kind of a concept of limited energy expenditure is the most, like, medical sounding term. But it has really resonated in my life personally and with a lot of other people with narcolepsy and chronic conditions, because a lot of times for me, it's not like, you know, if a friend asks me like, oh, do you want to go to a comedy show tonight? You know, some nights that sounds great, but other nights it's not like I'm going to have a symptom of narcolepsy. That's not really my excuse,
yeah.
But it's just kind of like, I just don't really have the spoons yeah. this week or, you know.
Or tonight, yeah.
Yeah, and having those, like I can choose here and there how I want to spend my spoons, but they're a little bit more limited. And so, you know, I just think that's a really wonderful concept, even for people that consider themselves introverts,
yeah.
You know, that they, we all, like how you spend your energy or what gives you energy and what takes away your energy.
Right.
You can talk in spoons if yeah. that's a helpful concept for you.
Yeah. But I really think that. Yeah, absolutely. That's an interesting analogy. And, I think it can be really helpful for a lot of people. And I mean, I mean, this is just maybe my theory, but I think we all potentially have different reasons for depletion of energy. And maybe for some people, it's, I don't know, you know, diabetes, or some people it's, you know, depression or anxiety, or some people it's, you know, narcolepsy with cataplexy, or like other people, you know, have other things. But I think we all have maybe you know, different things that both energize us as well as that deplete our energy. And, and it's, I think before, like when I was a kid, you know, I used to think, like my grandma would tell me, you know, eat your food and you'll have energy. And I was like, yeah. And I would eat my food and I would like imagine that was like little, you know, bars of energy, like going into my like little battery indicator, you know? And then like, I think that definitely helps, but then I just feel like there's so many other factors. It's definitely, you know, nutrition and then absorption of the nutrition. And then there's, you know, sleep. And then there's also just like the emotional side of everything. Anyways, there's just so many things. I'm fascinated with how multifaceted energy can be.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having narcolepsy just made me so sensitive to that, exactly what you're saying, because, you know, ultimately for me, I realized, like, I did graduate from law school, but I found myself super passionate about changing things, you know, raising awareness about narcolepsy and trying to write a book that would open people's hearts and minds. And I needed to be connected to creativity is ultimately what I realized. Like, I thought before I could be a lawyer and do law because I thought I could do whatever. Like I thought, like, you know, it didn't matter how I spent my time. And having narcolepsy, like those things that, you know, you could just kind of push through before, like now I just really couldn't push through, even with treatment and everything. It was just so much harder. And so then to do things that I'm passionate about and things that I care about, like it just makes it so much, I just have much more energy and can get through so much more of it. So, you know, that was a transition to like, you know, not everyone's in a position to just change their careers overnight, but I just feel so lucky that I've been able to now design my life around what gives me purpose so that like I'm getting the most energy, you know, for what I do day to day. So that's been definitely huge. And I know a lot of people feel that way with narcolepsy. And I imagine everyone does to some extent. But in a way, I feel lucky because it brought me very quickly to things that I care about and my passions very quickly.
I love that so much. I think that is so important, is to look at, you know, what energizes you. And you know, I love that you said that, you know, connecting with creativity and yeah, like you said, not everybody is lucky enough to be able to, you know, switch their career into something that they're more passionate about. But even if we can't switch our careers, You know, I think even just engaging in those things at least once a week, you know, if not daily, that just energize us, I think can really boost our energy, maybe give us a spoon back, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I hope so. I think so.
That's really cool. Thank you for sharing. So, I'm curious, have you found anything, I guess in your kind of research and what I like to call me search, of naps and are naps helpful? Are they a good thing for you?
Yeah, for me, for people with narcolepsy, oftentimes, not for everyone, but for a lot of people, it's a form of treatment. So I have to pretty much take a nap a day, and some people take multiple. And so it's kind of an interesting thing in a lot of work environments. It can be really challenging, especially I think as our culture goes towards this open environment, kind of like style. And so at one point in my career a few years ago, I went from having my own office with like a door to cubicle land and this building that had like 600 or 800 people in it. And there was like no private space except for a few phone booths. They had phone rooms.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I actually had to work with them to change one of those rooms into a wellness room is what we called it.
Mm.
So it had like a nice like cushion bench on it. In the room, and I brought in a little backpack that had a pillow and a blanket for myself.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about that was it was important for me, but the room got really busy. And a lot of people were using it. And I know one coworker, she said she liked to just go there and meditate.
Yeah.
And, you know, other people, they did have some days where they just needed a nap. And so I had like one coworker, he'd say, "Oh, do you need it?" 'Cause he knew the room was for me. So he's like, "Do you need it? Because if you need it," and I was like, no, it's fine. So it was really nice. And then we actually ended up they had to make a second phone room into a wellness room because it was so popular and busy. And I remember one of the architects that had designed this open concept space, you know, came back to talk to us about it. And, you know, at one point I raised my hand and said, "How do you feel about having nap spaces in your buildings?" And they said, "Well, if you have to nap, then you're not sleeping enough at night." And so I kind of set her up for it, unfortunately. And then I said, "Well, just so you know, people actually have sleep disorders. And a lot of people are using this space, you know, people are introverts, people, you know, there's a lot of different reasons for people to be sleeping during the day. And so we've created these wonderful wellness rooms that you didn't design in the building, but they are really busy and popular. And so I think, you know, naps, it's important for me, but I think it's important for a lot of other people. And I love that concept of a wellness room because it makes it less stigmatized. I think, you know, to think like it's not just for me and it's not just for sleeping, but just for resting. Or even if you need to get away, like emotionally, and take a few breaths, like that is an important space to have, to be able to do. So, you know, I think, there's always a thought like, well, you shouldn't nap too long or, so I know some people set alarms and maybe that's good. If you're napping every day, then you might have a condition. You should go to a sleep doctor. But if, you know, in general, I think if someone feels sleepy, they should not feel that that's a problem to take a nap during the day.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that I that's such a cool story about the wellness room. And I think every workplace should have a wellness room. And yeah, I think naps can be amazing. I've definitely taken naps, and where I used to work, we didn't have like a wellness room. There was a gym, but there wasn't like a room for like meditation or, you know, naps or anything like that. And so I would just go to my car, except for that it's like 100 degrees in Utah, which makes it like 120 degrees inside your car.
Wow.
And so you can't really take a nap during the summer. Anyways, so but I'm a huge fan of naps, like just, you know, 20 minute nap or something like that. And I feel so refreshed afterwards.
Oh, good. Yeah, I think we have to be careful as a culture. I've heard, you know, because of people with narcolepsy are my friends and my Instagram friends, and I hear stories for them that, like, one girl, I think in a different country, but she fell asleep in the library, and a security guard came over to her and told her she had to leave, that she couldn't sleep in the library.
Oh.
Other people say that they fell asleep at a Starbucks and were kicked out. And I, you know, we just have to be careful as a culture, and of not of hopefully embracing sleep more and taking it more seriously in a way, you know, not in a in a disciplinary way, but like in a medical way. And embracing it for what it is. And I've done many a naps in cars in Los Angeles in the heat too. So I can appreciate, you know, that's not a great situation either. So, I'd love to make workplaces more, wellness room friendly in the future.
Yeah. Same here. And I think, I fully believe in that. And I think, the sleeping, in workplaces or in, you know, public places, even, it is kind of a cultural norm, you know, that it's like almost not acceptable as a cultural norm, which is, that's difficult. That's really difficult. And, that's a tricky one, you know, as a business owner too, you know, anyways, that's maybe a different episode right there. But that's really really interesting. So if you don't mind, let's talk about dreams for a second. I've had some really interesting dreams, maybe strange dreams lately, and some also kind of good dreams too, you know, and I've also you know, some of them are really comforting and inspiring. And I lately I've remembered a lot of my dreams. Can you maybe like tell us about the dreams that we have? And, you know, is it good to try to remember our dreams? Or, you know, are there, like, do you think there's benefits from that, or like having even like a dream journal?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. For me, dreaming is such a strange process, because I feel like I've always had dreams, but then when my narcolepsy started is when I started having these hypnagogic hallucinations. So I do try to make for people, like, basically that the difference between those is, like, dreams are things where they're happening in other places, where you're like flying around and you know, or you're in a store and then it becomes a different store or something. But the hypnagogic hallucinations were when I thought I was waking up and seeing things, like a man come into my room, or feeling like a cat scratching me on my arm and thinking I was experiencing it, but I couldn't move to wake up. And so those can be really, really terrifying and scary. Experiences. And so that, it's good to know that that's not just a symptom of narcolepsy. Like I said earlier, like, that is something that can happen to people that don't have narcolepsy, usually during periods of stress or, you know, some sort of a change in medication or drinking alcohol or something like that. But that is, you know, when people talk about nightmares sometimes, I just want to be clear, like, that can, you know, that is, there's an actual term for it, and people can Google it, and you'll be very comforted to know that people have had those kind of hypnagogic hallucinations and sleep paralysis throughout time. There's a whole wonderful book about the whole ways that in different cultures, people have thought of, like, this man coming to the room. Like, there's like in Northern Europe, I believe they think of it as an old hag, you know, like an old witch coming in, you know? And so kind of depending on, like, what your culture is, even like alien abductions, like, a lot of people think that some people, like, alien abduction people might actually be having a hypnagogic hallucination. So there's a whole fascinating culture to those. And as far as, like, you know, more like dreams, like more normal experience of dreams where you're feel like you're flying or going through different places, I personally haven't felt like my creativity has come from that, but I know that's other people have felt like a lot of creativity can come from their dreams. I know artists who feel like their inspiration comes from directly from dreams, which I love. You know, I wish that that was true for me. You know, scientifically, I think one of the really areas they're still kind of understanding is why we sometimes remember our dreams and other times we don't. So I've had people say to me, like, I don't dream. And I'm like, no, you do. You just don't remember it.
Right.
And so I believe what they've said is like, whether you remember your dreams or not depends on what stage of sleep you're in when you wake up.
Oh, interesting.
So, and I don't know, I can't say off the top of my head what stages, you know, distinguish that, but, you know, that's just something we're still learning. And so, you know, whether you do or not kind of is something to do with what stage you're waking up in. And I don't know if there's a lot of meaning behind whether you do or not. But yeah, you know, like if people do feel inspired by them, then I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's also probably a mental, like we're mentally processing things. And so that kind of depends on your own beliefs too, like whether something has meaning or you think it's just kind of clearing out of your head, right? Are we processing things mentally so that it just clears, or is it things that matter, you know? And I wouldn't want to, I think that just people will have different belief systems and think, like I've had dreams about things that were major hardships like earlier in my life, you know, and if that's coming back, like, does that have meaning? Does it mean it's not settled and I should do something about it? I don't know.
But no, that's really interesting. I think, I think it's a complex subject, right? I think it's just as complex as maybe the mind, you know? So it's kind of tricky to be like, well, what do you think about dreams? It's kind of a deep question, but yeah, I've always enjoyed talking about dreams with people just because it's such an interesting topic and yeah, it can be definitely extremely, frightening and disturbing, but also really inspiring. I've had both. And sometimes, like when I wake up from a nightmare, I have to just like turn the lights on and, you know, go in a different room and watch some YouTube videos of real people doing real things and try to like, you know, engage with reality again. And then sometimes, you know, I've had dreams that are just so inspiring. Where I'm like I dream about the future and then it's like this amazing idea, you know, and I'm like, holy cow, where did this come from? You know?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That's incredible. With my hypnagogic hallucinations, some of them are really scary. Like I said, like a burglar or someone attacking me, but some are really like, I think I've heard the most beautiful music. And I always think in my head, like, oh my God, this is the most amazing song. And like, am I composing this music? Like that always seems unclear to me. And I think I just have to remember this. I just have to remember this tune, but the experience of it is so real. And I guess interestingly, like, in a book about hallucinations that Dr. Oliver Sacks wrote, he said that those kind of hallucinations, like they are like those when you're seeing things or hearing things or feeling touch, like it can be as real or if not, it can be more real than a reality, which is just hard, I think, for people to understand that haven't experienced it. But, you know, that those, so I've had some really beautiful experiences too, even with those, like just listening to the most amazing music. And then after I wake up and I'm like, wait, I can't compose classical music. I don't remember what it was. What?
Yeah. It's so fascinating. I mean, I've also had, I had a dream once, where it was so detailed, and I wear glasses to see things far away, but I could see so well in my dream, and it was like not only was it in like ultra HD, but it was also like the sound quality was just like crisp and just like watching a movie, but like up front and close, and I was like flying all over. Anyways, this is like probably totally random, but I was so impressed by my brain's ability to create a completely original environment. I've never seen it before. I've never heard of anything like it, but it was like this whole mountain range with all these trees that were a completely different species. And it was just fascinating, right? And so anyways, it's kind of cool.
That sounds awesome. Maybe you should direct a movie with your world.
Maybe. Oh yeah, I definitely love creativity for sure. So, well, I didn't mean to get off on a dream tangent there, but I really thank you for kind of sharing more a little bit about dreams. I think it's something that I just thought that it might be interesting to talk about dreams because dreams are a part of sleep. And you know, I think sleep should be a priority. And so the more we can talk about anything that's related to sleep can help, you know, maybe increase that positive connotation around sleeping.
Definitely.
So, yeah. Well, thank you so much for all of these things. You know, I thought of, you know, when I first saw your stuff, I actually have a good friend who was just diagnosed with narcolepsy. And so I'm really excited to share this with him. So I wonder if you have any advice for somebody who maybe just found out that they have this condition, that maybe they were, you know, did a sleep study or something, and then they just realized, oh, wow, like I have narcolepsy.
Yeah, I have lots of advice. But I'd say the biggest is just to know that you're not alone. I know for me, and it sounds so simple, but it's, a lot of people end up, I think we probably think that we have to go through this alone and that, you know, we're going to process it in our own way. And I know a lot of things that are out there can be scary. And like, there can be groups online that you think, or you read things online, you go, oh, I don't want to talk to other people because they're going to make me more depressed, or, you know, they're going to make this more challenging. But there are also a ton of really inspiring people out there, and a lot of people that are doing well, and also people that really empathize and can be there for you. So to just know that there is a community once you do feel like you want to connect with other people, that can be pretty life-changing. I know it was for me, and I've watched that happen for so many other people. And the empowering feeling of meeting someone or just talking to someone or even messaging them and realizing like, oh no, I'm not, you know, it's not just me. And that it's a process. I think that's like everything in life is a process. And I wanted to be better right away. I thought it was going to be like this small little road bump in my life and that I was going to take medication, I'll just be better and go on my merry way. you know, like most things, it was deceiving as a process, I think. And and as much as we can embrace and take patience with that process and find self-acceptance and self-love to go through some, you know, hardship, that, you know, ultimately for me, like it has become something that I can manage really well and has found, like I said earlier, like it has helped me find my purpose and my passion and connect me with so many cool people. But you know, definitely have to have patience to go through trial and error and finding what works best for you. So
yeah, I love that. If you could share what your maybe your mission or your purpose or passion is right now, I would love to hear that.
Well, I really, you know, want to make sleep cool and you know, I guess I've heard recently that if I say something like I'm trying to make it cool, it's just never going to be cool. That's what I can say. But just, I think what fascinates me is the invisible parts of our lives and what's happening behind the eyes. And so using art and writing and storytelling, I think especially to open people's eyes to, you know, sleep and sleepiness is just what drives me and gets me up in the morning. Because, you know, I one of the main things I think I've learned through this is that as an advocate and a spokesperson and all that is that I think originally I was so attached to facts. I thought facts, you know, 1 in every 2,000 people have narcolepsy, or, you know, here are the names of the symptoms. and this is how serious it is. It's comparably serious to this other condition. So now you should care.
Yeah.
And I've loved learning about social science and learning, you know, like even how our brains work and how much we can care about and how much we can process, and that, you know, storytelling and that, yeah, it's one of the most powerful vehicles to get people to care and to get them to understand and to, you know, hopefully empathize. I guess, you know, that's our programming for Project Sleep. We have a range of different things, but probably my favorite is a leadership program where I now train people on how to share their story effectively. So
I love that.
That's what gets me up, I guess, every day.
That's so powerful. I think stories are one of the most powerful things that we can learn how to do is to tell our story. So I think that's amazing. So thank you for doing that and making that a part of your life. So that's really great. I want to ask you another question. What other advice do you have for people out there who are just desperate for a more happy life right now?
I love that question so much. And I think in my own journey, one of the most powerful moments, I talk about it in my memoir, was about learning my own headspace. And basically, like, I had been diagnosed and I was about a year in, and I remember walking to the law school and I was late for class because I had, you know, messed up my medication timing. And I was doing my usual internal dialogue where I go, "You're late, you're terrible. What's wrong with you, Julie? Like, get it together." And then all at once I stopped and I breathed and I heard that I was doing that to myself. And I realized that I was beating myself up kind of mentally, and that, like, I had no support from a lot of other people around me, but, like, if I was beating myself up too, like that was even making it worse and harder. So, like, at that point I just stopped and I said, like I reframed what I was saying to myself, and I said, "Julie, you're doing the best you can. Like, maybe just staying in law school is an accomplishment." And I don't, like, know where that voice came from, because I didn't even really believe it at the time. Yeah. And now looking back, I do believe it. And I realized that graduating was a huge accomplishment, and thousands of people have told me that, but at the time, no one told me that. And so just reframing that voice and how I spoke to myself, was a huge, huge shift for me. And to walk away and find that, more, self-loving or self-forgiving or self-affirming voice, I think was one of the biggest mind shift changes that changed my life at that time. And, you know, so, you know, I think of happiness as kind of an interesting concept, and that, like, we can't spend all of our lives in happiness, and that bad feelings come, but that it's how do we then handle it? Do we let those negative voices, we all have our sad stories, right? And so do we let those consume us, or do we find a different voice that can talk back to it and say, "Thank you. Like, thank you, sad story. That's wonderful. Nice to see you. I'm all set." Or, you know, "Actually, you know, you should feel proud, even if you don't even genuinely feel that way." So that would be my advice, is just to listen to how we speak to ourselves, and to try to find new voices or new mantras that are a little bit kinder.
That's amazing. I love that. That's really powerful. Yeah. Learn your own headspace and listen to how you speak to yourself. And then, find that self-affirming voice. There's so many negative voices, right? There's that we don't have to work for those ones.
Nope. They will always be with us.
Find your self-affirming voice. I just think that's huge. That's key. Where can people follow, Project Sleep? Where can they find you and, discover more, learn more if they want to understand more about what you're doing?
Yeah. So I'm on all the social media accounts, and Project Sleep has accounts, and I do as well. And I love Instagram. Instagram's probably my favorite. And I'm always talking about, you know, how much energy I have or don't have, And so, and we also have Project Sleep's website, and I have a blog as well at julieflygar.com. I'd say like my favorite resource is my book. And I know it sounds like, you know, I'm pretty biased, but I think if you see it on Amazon, Wide Awake and Dreaming, you can read what other people have said about it and how it's impacted them. And so, you know, that would probably be my favorite resource that I've created for people. And it has an audio book too. So if people don't feel like reading, I recorded the audio book last summer, finally. So yeah.
Love it. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show with me, Julie. This has been just wonderful. So thank you. And I wish you the best. And I'm just grateful that I've been able to kind of peek inside your head for a little bit.
Thank you. It's a huge, huge honor for me to be on your podcast. So yeah, it just, and I love this discussion so much. So thanks again.
I really hope this episode helped you to have a more happy life today. If you enjoy this episode, share it and let me know by tapping the stars in the reviews. You can also find me on Instagram at morehappylife or by going to morehappylife.co. Thanks for listening and see you soon.